Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Possession speed, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton.
Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Money, 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 money.
Yes, it is that time of year, ladies and gentlemen, where the NFL teams have spent more than a small European nation in free agency. Or in our case, perhaps there is a lack thereof of said money. My name is Jack Reed. Welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Again, I'm stepping in for Andy, who again is missing, unfortunately. He came down with a late illness. But as always, my friend, my compatriot, the stats guru, the draft guy, the guy that just loves tape dogging whenever he can. Alistair, do I have you? Do I have you not?
You got me clean. And okay, we're not lying, TDU crew. Andy was actually ready to go, and 30 minutes before, you know, having a toddler, things come up, and we're just going to have to go on as a duo show. But man, you and I have just swanned in again, like we did with the last show. We've avoided all of the stress of the first few days of free agency, and none of you listeners will ever know if Jack or I or Andy were turning on Hortiz, thought that they didn't know what they were doing. You're just going to hear a very measured version of TDU because we've had some good news, obviously, recently.
It's one of the great joys of perhaps just waiting a little bit before news drops, because I'll be honest, there were some questions that I had in my mind. How strong they were is going to remain in the ether, I believe. But we do wish Andy all the best and hope that he is well soon. We've got a bit of stuff to get through today, Al, but I thought we could just jump straight into the signings, and then perhaps we can take a step back and talk about kind of the macro level, what this plan is from Chef Hortiz and Harbaugh together based on some of the players that we talk about. How does that sound?
Sounds perfect. Let's get into it.
All right, well, I think the one signing that we need to talk about first up, it was the first one, not that we're going to go through signings chronologically, $18 million, fully guaranteed, 1 year, Khalil Mack, the edge, the leader, the Hall of Famer is signed. Now, we've kind of split the difference. I was hoping for something closer to around 16. You were thinking that he might be tempted with 22. We've kind of split the difference, which is great. How does this signing make you feel? For me, it's a must. It's a yes. That edge group now doesn't look so thin. We've still got him. He's 34 years old, but he's always kept his body in shape. So I don't think there's going to be any longevity issues, at least for this year.
No. First off, kudos to Mac, because I'm sure he could have got more money to leave and chase, you know, a Super Bowl with a different team. So good on him. He clearly likes the culture that Harbaugh's built. You're right, he did split the difference. You were going in the Hortiz fashion where you're trying to lowball the guy, but he clearly was happy to take a slight paycheck, which is going to suit the team very, very well. What's interesting, we can go straight into strategy, is only making it a one-year deal puts some pressure on for this to be a year where the Chargers really go full tilt for a Super Bowl, because presumably next year he might not be in the same situation. So I thought that was an interesting start, because then the moves we saw over the next few days of free agency were not the type of moves you would expect to see for a team who's trying to win right now. And I'll take you there, Jack. Let's talk about a few of the non-moves that were made. There was a chance to get DK Metcalf. He ends up being traded to the Steelers for 5 years, $150 million. So that doesn't happen. Chance to get Devontae Adams, potentially, at a more palatable cost of 2 years, $46 million. He goes to Sean McVay and the LA Rams. And recently we've seen Cooper Kupp sign a $15 million a year deal to go to the Seahawks. So I think a lot of the unrest within the fan base has been around not moving or making moves at the wide receiver spot. But how do you feel about that in the context of Mac getting a one-year deal?
Listen, and you never know what the handshake deals are behind closed doors. So I'll go straight away with complete prognostication and hypothesis. It might just, I mean, $18 million fully guaranteed. Not a lot of edges got that for like one year. You never know. Hey, listen, we're just going to keep you going on one year. Listen, you can retire if you want to, but who knows? In terms of the players that we missed out on, money talks, right? DK Metcalf. Hey, I want to play in the sun. I want to play with an established quarterback, man. That's what I want to do. No, he goes and becomes one of the highest paid receivers in a cold climate with no quarterback. So I look at that and I go, well, maybe he's not the person you want on your team, if that's the case. And I'm sure some people will disagree with me, and that's fine. In terms of Devontae and in terms of Cooper Kupp, man, there's so much money being thrown around. And if the Chargers signed either of those for that money, Devontae, I could kind of perhaps maybe enjoy a little bit, but definitely not Kupp. I'd like, you look at his numbers, and his numbers have been sort of rescinding year over year. He's coming off a pretty serious injury plagued season. So it was hard, I must admit. Khalil Mack really didn't, the signing didn't sort of make me happy, but it did kind of give me a foundation to move forward over the next couple of days, I guess.
Yeah, especially when you've got to look at it in the context of Joey Bosa being released. So I think it was integral to keep one of those two, so you're not having to hit too many needs at the edge. So it was a great start to free agency. It happened actually technically just a day before free agency, but we thought it would set the table for a rash of big signings. But what were some of these signings that we then actually saw within the first 48 hours of free agency, Jack?
Oh, well, J.K. Scott, the man that you said perhaps is going to get cut for someone who's got a bit more depth to their kick as well. You think about Harbaugh's tendency to be a little bit conservative, you know, risking a short kick with hang time, or do you just go for long kicks, you know, field position. He gets 2 years up to $6 million. The guarantees are to be confirmed. Jalen Reagor gets a contract. That sort of boggles my mind. How did that make you feel? So I'm going, this guy was just peripheral. I didn't see much. However, there are some Charger fans that said they saw enough that, you know, perhaps he deserved a little bit more time with Herbert.
Yeah, I think what's telling is the contract terms aren't out or available yet. So it might be a bare minimum and just keep him in-house for now. But nothing would preclude you from cutting, you know, June during training camp if you wanted to. So it's just, let's keep a guy in-house for the time being.
Yeah, another body, I guess. And listen, he did make some pretty fairly incredible catches. It's just, you know, if he's starting in our wide receiver room, I'd be, well, not starting. If he's named in our wide receiver room in week one, I get a little bit concerned. This next bunch of guys, other than a couple that we sort of signed from in-house, I have not a lot of idea over Alistair. So can you please talk to me about Dante Jackson? I know he's fast, but that was also, what, 4 or 5 years ago when he did his, when he was at the combine, you know, 4.32, I think his 40 was. So where does this guy fit and how are we going to use him?
I might deal with this also in combo, because the other signing being Benjamin St. Juiced at the cornerback spot, we may as well deal with them together, because they are complementary of each other's skill sets. So I think Dante Jackson still has the speed. If you look at what he's done recently, he does still jump routes. He had 5 interceptions for the Steelers last season. He is 5'10", 180 pounds. So we're looking at a guy who's got similar dimensions to Asante Samuel, but a heck of a lot quicker. Unfortunately, he's got some of the same issues with tackling that Asante does. His missed tackle rate is 17.5% from last year. He finds the ball just like Asante does. He's had 19 interceptions across his career, and he's got that speed. So it's interesting to see Minta not really looking to find a, quote, CB1. Mm. They seem quite content to find guys who have some skills, can be worked into the system, and pay them a little bit less. So the Dante Jackson deal is 2 years and $13 million. Benjamin St. Juste is a little bit different. He's a 6'3", 200-pound corner who Harbaugh knows because for at least a season in college, he was at Michigan with him, predominantly as a special teamer. A third-round pick for the Commanders. He's less of a ball hawk. He's only had the one pick in his career in three seasons. And the Commanders actually benched him during the playoff run. So he was on the outer. He's more of a guy who can tackle, but at his size, struggles a bit to move in and out of his breaks and to mirror and shadow receivers. If people look just at their PFF grades, they're not going to be very happy, Bolt fam, because Dante Jackson last year had a PFF grade of 49.4, Benjamin St. Juste to 47.7. But what I would say is interesting is when they are targeted in coverage, in terms of the completion percentage allowed, both of them are average or slightly above average corners. Dante Jackson, when he's targeted, is allowing catches 61% of the time, which ranked 45th out of 127. Benjamin St. Juste, when he's targeted, 53rd out of 127. So okay, reasonable cover corners. But what do you think this means for strategy, Jack? I think this is interesting because the corner room now is Dante Jackson, Benjamin St. Juste, Cam Hart, Tahib Still, Jasir Taylor, Dean Leonard. Is this the group they're going to go with this year? They're clearly lacking a standout number one cornerback who can cover and shadow number one right wide receivers. Where does that land for you?
Well, it's fascinating, right? Just as you're going through these numbers, and even when you look at them physically, they're two very different styles of cornerback. Yep. Tahib Still also has a quite a unique skill set. So does Cam Hart. So does Dean Leonard. So does Jasir Taylor, right? So is this kind of the Swiss Army knife room that Minter wants to build? You know, hopefully, and this is where I start to see some of the other moves and perhaps, you know, I'm not going to jump the gun and talk about draft strategy in this episode, but if the pressure's going to be there and we get push up front with four or with a blitzing linebacker with five, it can't, you know, do you really need a top dog number one, you know, $25 million a year if the ball's going to be getting out fairly quickly? Now, that's going to come and bite you in the bum some month, sometime. I'm sure it does. I'm not saying that you don't need one of those. But perhaps it's just this process of we sort of don't know what Tahib Still is just yet. And same with Cam Hart. Do we go back to the draft and get another two in the fourth or the fifth to develop as well? It seems to me that Jesse Minter has his guys. He sees a skill set and goes, that's what we're lacking. And that's going to be situational football, which I don't mind.
Yeah. And Dante Jackson brings speed that no one in the room has. And St. Juste, I expect this might foreshadow Jasir Taylor eventually moving off the roster, or Leonard, because he is actually a good special teams player. His grade for the Commanders on special teams was 67.3. So if you think about St. Juste more as a cornerback four or five who plays predominantly as a gunner on special teams, I think that looks a lot better. But man, can I echo what you said? I think this defense is all about dominate with your front seven, your linebackers who can blitz, your front four who can stunt and get pressure. You've got great safeties with Derwin James and Elijah Molden and Aloe Gilman. Our corners are going to play off coverage 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. And he would rather take a flyer on someone like Dante Jackson, who might have five interceptions for the season, and trust that they're going to win the game with protecting the house down deep.
Who do you see as being the Christian Fulton of this year out of those two then? Christian Fulton arguably had an above average season to start off with before he hurt his knee. Who do you see as having more of a, I guess, growth or an ability to sort of turn that skill set into something quite beneficial for the Bolts? Is it St. Juste or is it Dante Jackson?
I think it's neither. I think it is Cam Hart or Tahib Still, but I expect he will predominantly play slot. I think it's got to be more Cam Hart because Christian Fulton at LSU was more of a man cover corner who can get his hands on you a bit at the line, and I don't really see either of them as being a similar player to Fulton. So I think they're going to try to do it as a collective rather than with individual players.
But sorry, what I meant by that question of who do you see as perhaps elevating and as being a starting cornerback here? Is it Jackson or is it St. Juice? Because Fulton came in, we didn't really know where he was going to be, but he ended up essentially kind of being CB1, I guess, you know, with Still and Cam Hart at the start of the year at least. So are you thinking it's Jackson?
I'm thinking it's Dont'a Jackson. He started basically all of last year for the Steelers, and he's got 7 seasons of experience, 91 starts in the NFL, former second round pick. He's the guy.
And so is St. Juice a slot? Are you saying, is he going to be predominantly slot? Is he that slow that he can't play on the outside now?
He's done both at the Commanders, but his better tape is outside. So I'm really thinking the slot is going to be the domain of Tahib Still and Derwin James, and they're going to split duties there.
Well, I just feel like 6'3", 200, you know, that brings some tackling around the line of scrimmage, which we sorely need out of a slot cornerback. All right. Let's move to something that really shook me, and I think shook you as well, the signing of Bradley Bozeman. Now, I was shook because the contract details weren't released immediately, and we were fretting privately about going, have we signed this guy to starting center money because of what we saw last year? Center's a dire, dire, dire need. Alongside this, we're also hearing rumblings from Chargers from the Bolt is that Zion Johnson is going to move into the center spot as well. Let's talk about that second. Bradley Bozeman, 2 years, up to 6.5, 3.3-ish guaranteed. This feels to me like a end of year one ripcord, as you've got 2.3 in year one and then 4.1 in year two. What are we thinking? How are you feeling about this center position right now?
Oh, how I feel about it right now isn't good, but it will depend on, you know, there are still some guys out there you could sign. Not many, though. Most are off the table. And you could still draft someone in the first or second round. Yeah. Bozeman, I hope that price point is really there as a depth piece. The money isn't a clear depth piece signing. It's kind of low-end starter money. And it is a bit weird they gave him the 2 years instead of just the 1 year. But as you said, Jack, there is a ripcord after year one. Only about half of his deal is guaranteed. If you wanted to cut him after year one, you're eating only $1 million worth of dead cap. Mm. He's the fields guy, right? I know a lot of people were quick to say, this is terrible. But when you think about backups in the past of Will Clapp and others, this guy does not get bull rushed back into the quarterback's lap. He's available. He played all the season. He's meant to, you know, you see him picking up Herbert and pushing guys if they're on top of Herbert.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You hope he doesn't start, right? But look, let's call it a necessary evil.
Yeah, you're right. And we don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but outwardly, Bradley Bozeman seemed to be the team guy. He was the guy that defended Herbert and, you know, bull and just, you know, barraged into, what was his name from New Orleans? He tried to break his leg. I can't remember his name anyway. So, you know, and this does strike me as a deal if Zion, which you're going to talk about now, doesn't work out and we have a rookie center coming in, maybe he's that bridge between, you know, for the first 4 games, Zion isn't working. And then we go, we need a starter. Our rookie might not just be ready just yet. So maybe Bozeman starts somewhere in the middle of the year. If he's not a bad backup. I guess that's what we can say, but we don't want him starting or playing bulk minutes. Can Zion Johnson play center? Now, having a look at his player profile from my perspective, you look at the raw athletic score. You hear about how smart this guy is. Is he a rocket scientist or is he a computer engineer? I can't remember.
Computer scientist, yeah.
He's a computer scientist. It kind of makes sense that perhaps his natural progression is to move to the center spot. And I guess glass half full would say, you look at his size, you look at his athletic profile and go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. The glass that's not half full, that's half empty, no, is actually completely empty. Actually, let's call it that, is that he's trained his whole, essentially, I mean, he played a little bit in college and high school at center, but he's played his whole career at guard. You know, he got drafted as a guard and he can't do that at the professional level. So let's give him another go. Alistair, I did the silly analogy of me saying, it's like me as a literature teacher, English teacher, being taught, you know, or being told that you have to go and now teach specialist maths. It's like, okay, I'm a teacher. We're both teachers who teach specialist maths and English, but there's a there's a certain skill set that you need to teach both. You are a little more bullish perhaps on it than I am, but I have massive reservations about the quickness, the smarts, and his ability to pick up and read defenses very quickly, which I just haven't seen on tape.
Now, never say it's a silly analogy, Jack. You don't do silly analogies. You do beautiful analogies. I just think it might not be a perfect analogy. I think it's a reasonable illusion, though, that, you know, it is a different position. He has not played there. So you are asking someone to do different things and his muscle memory might not be used to it. But unlike Pipkins moving from right tackle to right guard, I think Zion's body shape and skill set does suit the center position because he is athletic and he is quite strong. Whereas Pipkins, you're trying to take a 6'5" guy with a low, like pretty small bum and legs and move him from tackle to guard. And I was quite dubious about that one because I just figured his strength profile would not stand up to the task.
Mm.
The thing with Zion that we haven't seen yet is his ability to show football smarts, ID stunts, realize when he's not being rushed so he can help his mate. He doesn't do that stuff very well. And that stuff is very important in the center position. So I understand the reservations. And in my ideal world, he is not the plan at center, but it's a better plan for me than Bradley Bozeman being the starter at center. So that's absolutely where I'm coming from. Yeah.
All right. And, well, let's talk about, and as we're on the offensive line, the most recent signing, because we're hitting 20 minutes now. Let's get positive, okay? Let's get McCabecton. 6'7", 165 kilos of big, big, big run blocking strong man. I have been clambering up to the roof and back again for our guards to be absolute huge units. You look at the offensive lines of teams like the Ravens, of the Philadelphia Eagles, where Becton comes from. Their guards are enormous men who can move, who are still very, very agile. Now, this signing now, I guess, puts the whole kind of free agency into a little bit of perspective. But the more I've read on Becton, the more tape that I've looked at it, and shout out to my my wife's cousin's partner, Colin, who's a Philly Eagles fan. We chat a bit. He says, you guys have got a good one. And all of the fans that I've seen they're all saying, hey, that guy worked so hard. That guy's an absolute mauler. Once he gets his hands on someone, that guy's done. He's on his ass or he's either just being absolutely controlled and the gaps are there. So Mekhi Becton slipping in at guard has got me licking my lips. Licking my lips, Alistair.
And if this move was made on day one of free agency, no fans on Twitter, I think, would have been up in arms. But from day one of free agency, apparently they were talking and he was in the building and they were working out some details and it just took 4 days to sign. Jack, I reckon this is one of the best moves in free agency that any NFL team has made. The contract terms have come out. 2 years, $20 million.
Absolutely. Insane.
In context, Will Fries and Aaron Banks are making $17.5 million, $18 million, respectively, for 4- and 5-year deals. We have signed a 25-year-old Super Bowl winner, former pick number 11 overall, who suits the scheme, is 6'7", and said, hey, buddy, come play for us. You were dominant last year. You finally stayed healthy. You've had two knee injuries at the Jets. We ain't the Jets. We're going to be closer to Jeff Statland and the Eagles. You're going to come in. You're going to hit free agency again at the age of 27. And if you play really, really well for us, we're either going to extend you on massive money or some other team will. So stay hungry, big boys. And Wolfgang Puck is serving you pizza all day, every day.
Only one family size, though, because we just got to make sure that we don't get too carried away in the mess hall, all right? Listen, I did a little bit of, you know, went back and looked at his draft profile. Realistically, you can see why people fell in love with him at guard. He's an absolute monster. His footwork is insane as well for a man that size, and he has a huge 7 foot arm span. So you can see how, you know, draft nicks and teams just went, this guy's a once in every 10 years kind of prospect. But a man, I guess, with that size playing on the edge, you know, you got to be able to cover space quickly. And there's only someone that big, there's only so fast you can be. You can only be so fast. Sorry, got my words mixed up there. So I guess now that he's had a couple of years in the system, you know, some of the weaknesses that draft profiles had of him is rawness, needs to improve leverage at the point of attack, should improve hand placement, could have weight issues in the NFL. I think those are still probably all there from a tackle, but for a guard, my Lord, I shared with Alistair on a chat some footage from the Rams game, and he's making guys that are 300, 305 defensive tackles look like toys.
Andy.
just looking like Andy. And when he hits the second level and hits a linebacker, that linebacker's on his back. He's done. He's out of the play.
Flying
done.
Back 8 yards.
Like unbelievable. So this is something that I'm so happy to have a guy that wants to hit people and probably not hurt them, because I think he seems like a really genuinely nice guy, but just overpower with size and strength. It's so good. It's so good, Alistair.
And to put a bow on it, even as a tackle, his athleticism was what got him drafted and gave him a chance to stick a tackle. At 360 pounds, he's run the 40 at pretty close to 5 seconds. I still remember Dan Jeremiah and Rich Eisen being blown away watching him run. And he does have quick feet. Just as you said, at the tackle spot, he will get beaten from time to time. Mm. But you shift him inside to guard, and those quick feet are more than sufficient for an NFL-level guard. And the great thing about this signing is any of the risk that comes with his size and with his injury history is mitigated by it only being a 2-year deal with not Absolutely. Much more than 10 mil guaranteed. This is not going to be a JC Jackson scenario. And if things go completely pear-shaped, fine. After year one, you have to cut him. You're not eating much dead cap. Perfect signing. And you've totally redeemed yourself, Chef Ortiz. You've basically fixed up free agency for the whole team. But keep working.
Absolutely. And before we, and I think it's only right to then transition into our running back signing, but another big man that's coming back, Tier Tut. 1 year, $5.5 million, earned it. Great. We'll talk about his running mate later of the people that are leaving the Bolts. But lovely to see Tart back. Again, if he's starting as our number one, I'm not super happy. But as a second or a third piece, I think that's great. Now, the holes that hopefully are now going to be opened up in front of Justin Herbert. And also our new, do we say bell cow running back? At kind of 1 year up to 9.25 with a base of 5.25, Najee Harris, 27-year-old, 6'1", 240. Someone we haven't had in the building for a while at that size profile. Melvin Gordon might have been sort of the last one that I can remember. Then we transitioned into the Ecklers and the J.K. Dobbinses and things that are kind of smaller. I've always loved his tape at the Steelers. And again, looking at what Steelers fans say of Najee Harris, they just go, hey, this guy works so hard. He's a great locker room guy.
Yeah.
It's sad to see him go. And the one thing that I did pick up is that everyone said, hey, if we just got you a really good offensive line, I think you would have been an absolute gun. It just seems that in Pittsburgh, fans anyway, kind of said that the line at Pittsburgh just never really, I guess, equaled the skill set that Najee Harris had. So where are you sitting on this Najee Harris?
I'm very positive about it, but I'll paint the two pictures because there are two ways of looking at it. If you want to be negative, he's had the most carries in the league after Derrick Henry over the last 4 years. He also got ridden into the ground as Alabama's all-time leading touchdown scorer. So he's a very overworked back to this point in his career. And if you look at just your basic efficiency metrics, he across his career, he's averaged under 4 yards a carry at 3.9. His longest run in the NFL is 37 yards in his career. Jim Harbaugh's career long as a quarterback is longer than that. So okay. The nerds don't like him. If you looked at who is more efficient when you gave him touches, Jaylen Warren was doing way better for your EPA per rush than Najee.
How do you know that that's not Najee Harris opening up the door for Jaylen Warren? And what are the carries? Is Jaylen Warren on third down? Or like who's you know, you got to think that Najee Harris goes 3 yards, 4 yards. Okay, all of a sudden it is third and short. It's third and three, third and four. So, you know, a workhorse back. And I get what you're saying with usage, and I think that's going to be something that we need to watch. But Derrick Henry, I mean, the guy's still doing it. You know, he's a genetic freak and specimen. But we're talking about a guy over 6'2", 240. Najee as well. You know, how well he looks after his body and that type of stuff. We know Derrick Henry, you know, puts in all the work doing freaky stuff with chains and crazy strength. Don't know that about Najee. But what's the positive side here, Alistair?
The positive side is you've only signed him for 1 year. Base salary of $5 million up to $9.25. So who cares? It's 1 year with a starting running back. He's the only active player to have at least 1,000 rushing yards in each of the last four seasons. He has not missed a game in his NFL career. The guy's played 65 games in four seasons. Incredibly durable. The thing I'm most excited about is, as you said, Jack, in the Steelers scheme, the offensive line wasn't good, and they were heavily zone-based in their run game. Poor Najee Harris has 706 zone carries to 384 gap carries, about twice as many. And if you look at what he's good at and what he's not good at, he's not good at running out wide and making a quick cut and picking a lane and going. He's good at running between the tackles because he's 240 pounds. So come on down to Greg Roman's scheme. We'll probably swap that. We'll run twice as much gap as we will zone. And this guy embodies Harbaugh football. It is tiring to tackle him. By the fourth quarter, you don't want to tackle him, and you will lose the football game. So I love the Najee Harris signing. I've never liked watching him for the Steelers. I thought he's a boring back in that system. Bring him on down to Harbaugh Town, wear powder blues. He's from the Bay Area, and I can see good things happening behind 6'7", 6'8", 6'4", offensive lineman. Let's get it.
I can tell you, fourth quarter, you're going, okay, I've got a tackle. I'm a defensive tackle. I'm a big guy. I'm 310 pounds, right? I've been going all day. I'm nose tackle. I'm D tackle. That's what I'm doing. And I'm being absolutely manhandled by Mekhi Becton. And I have to tackle Najee Harris at 240. I'm done. And that's the way Harbaugh wants to win, is grind. Love it. Just for time's sake, Troy Dye comes back. I think that's great. Perriman comes back. It's great. Williams comes back. Deshaun Hand is signed. Naquan Jones is signed. Heineke's back. Delshawn Phillips. Alistair, who do you want out of that list? Who do you want to focus on the most? And what do you want to chat about?
We'll touch quickly on the defensive line because Puna Ford goes to the Rams for 3 years, $30 million. And probably that is the move I was most critical of before thinking about it a bit. They bring in Deshaun Hand and Naquan Jones, who are teammates of Tyrae Tart from their time at the Titans with Mike Vrabel. They all know each other. And they're going to be much cheaper than that. And each of them is just like those rotational defensive linemen who are skilled. They crash down through gaps. Probably Naquan Jones is more of the nose tackle and Hand is more of the three technique, a bit like Tart.
Mm.
But the one stat that stood out to me, Jack, is if you just look at missed tackle rate last year, Naquan Jones's missed tackle rate was 14th best out of 143 defensive tackles. Deshaun Hand, 33rd out of 143 defensive tackles. Puna, 65th out of 143. Yeah. So we've got two guys up there who don't miss tackles as much. And they might not be the player that Puna is. I think Puna can take on a double team. Neither of these guys, I don't think, are great at that. They probably have more pass rush upside. But you look at the price that's been paid for them, I can see the vision. I understand. You're like, okay, we need two guys to replace Puna. We're going to take one guy at a price that's not released yet, Naquan Jones. We're going to take Deshaun Hand, a fourth round pick from Alabama, for $3.5 million. It just makes sense. And it's a very savvy way of looking at things. I'll bring you in, Jack, to talk about unless you want to say something on the defensive line.
I was going to say it makes more dollars. It makes less dollars and more sense. Yes, indeed, yeah. For the amount of money that's being spent. Yeah.
Yeah. You knew you wanted to nail a pun. Okay. I like it.
Yeah. And I completely missed it, by the way, when I started it. So yeah, that's all right.
No, it worked. You hit it. Talk to me about Mike Williams. We cut him when he was going to cost $20 million. We re-sign him for 1 year up to $6 million.
After listening to his intro press conference, it's a different Mike Williams that comes back to the Bolt, I feel. It's a humbled, dare I say, perhaps not so laissez-faire and a little bit kind of, you know, shruggy shoulders and walking away, I've got this. It's a guy that might have realized that the NFL is a pretty rough business, and how he was treated at the LA Chargers was perhaps better than around the league. The grass isn't always greener, but it's kind of the... And he said, I never wanted to leave. I never wanted to leave. I wanted to be back here. He's gone and made some money. Obviously, his time at the Jets, I think, really... And we know Mike Williams... I don't want to hypothesize about this, but Mike Williams very much is a confidence player. When his confidence is low and he's not being looked after, I think that's when he probably gets in his own head. Drops start to happen. He doesn't get open as much. So I like this, but wide receiver was one of the positions that I thought we were going to just shore up a little bit. I don't think this makes the wide receiver room any better, and I don't think it fills the hole. Josh Palmer walking away from to the Bills for $36 million, $18 million guaranteed. I was blown away by that signing. Does it give the wide receiver room something that we didn't have? And that is a yes. So you look at the way that this team is being built. They're finding guys that going, hey, that's a skill set. A guy that can, you know, straight line, pretty good. Jump up, jump ball ability, red zone target. We don't have one of those. We haven't had one of those in the wide receiver room for a while. Let's get him back up to $6 million bargain. It's successful if he has around 500, 600-ish yards and he's got 4 to 5 touchdowns. I think that's what Mike Williams brings to us. Any more than that, and I think it's a bonus. However, I really don't want to see Herbert just lobbing those balls up on third down if he needs to at Mike Williams. It can't. He's not going to be the same player he was 3 years ago.
If he can be a similar player to what he was, I'm going to say that this wide receiver room might be slightly better than last year's, because I think Mike Williams is an upgrade on Josh Palmer if he is Mike Williams before he did his ACL in that terrible hit against the Vikings, because he still caught a few balls for the Steelers and Jets. It just took time to acclimate, and he was talking about how he didn't have the same rehab facility, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't fix the problem, though, long-term, Jack. He's only on a one-year deal, and the team has work to do at the wide receiver spot. If it's not going to be in the draft now, it's got to be next off-season. But for a one-year strike, pretty happy to welcome in Mike Williams. Whether I'd be happy to welcome back Keenan, different story.
Well, who knows? We've still got a lot of off-season ahead of us. And the wide receiver class, from all accounts, is not particularly strong this year. That's kind of about it in terms of the major signings. Did you want to... We've touched on Puna. We've touched on Josh Palmer. Christian Fulton is signed by our rivals, the Chiefs. $15 million guaranteed. That blows my mind. Nick Neiman goes to the Chiefs. Joey Bosa does the Von Miller, goes to the Bills for $12.6 million. Stone Smart, your man, gone. He's to the Chiefs. We don't know the terms just yet. Simi Fehoko, which was a bit sad to see him because I thought he was Herbert's guy, is going to the Cardinals. And Morgan Fox is signed by the Falcons. Very similar deal that he was kind of on at the Bolts. Any of those, Al, I've just lost him. So I guess for me, the Puna signing was very rich. The Josh Palmer signing was overly rich at 36 with $18 million. I just think with a guy with his injury history, and he's always kind of been that at best wide receiver too. You know, I'll be interesting to see where he goes. And, you know, Christian Fulton, have him, Chiefs. I think he's very grabby, and I think he's going to be grabby when we play him as well. Neiman was a special teamer that I guess, you know, going to the Texans, it's kind of interesting. We're a little bit thin at linebacker now in terms of a depth piece. Obviously, Troy Dye's sold. Alistair, you jump back with me. I've just gone through Puna, Palmer, Fulton, Neiman.
Yep.
Anything that you wanted to sort of touch on there?
Not on players who have gone elsewhere, because I think most of them, it makes sense why the team decided not to pay them.
Yep.
And I think Nick Neiman's going to be replaced by Delshawn Phillips, the linebacker from the Texans, whose special teams grades are terrific. I might talk to you about a couple of things before we move on to some around the league chatter. I want to talk about one particular move the team could make first, and then I'm going to talk to you about some free agents who are remaining. I reckon the team still has gaps at tight end, interior offensive line, edge, wide receiver could do with some work, cornerback one. Do you think it makes sense to fix the tight end position so it's not a hole for the draft by paying $11 million and trading a fourth or fifth round pick for Mark Andrews? The team has $25 million or thereabouts left to spend on 2025 cap hits. Andrews is only going to be under contract for 2025. It'll cost you $11 million to bring him across.
Do I have the option to go for Dallas Goedert?
You do.
I do?
Yep.
I haven't
checked what his cap hit is, but
yeah, yes. If that's on the table, I'm possibly preferring Goedert over Andrews. I just think, I know that there's the familiarity with the Baltimore days there. Andrews is an exceptional player.
And was for Greg Roman.
I understand that, but he's older. He had that terrible roll up ankle. What do they call that tackle? The hip drop tackle that his ankle got completely torn up. And who's the tight end at Baltimore that's kind of superseded him? The Isaiah Likely.
Isaiah Likely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Goedert for me would be, he's younger, I believe. And I think again, he's coming from a Super Bowl winning team. Probably going to be more expensive. Either of those two, I'll be really happy with. I think the room needs a veteran as well, and I think tight end's going to be hit in the draft. But yeah, I'd do it for $11 million. Andrews sounds pretty good.
Where I'll take you next. So, okay, we fix tight end now if it's Goddard or Andrews, so we're not hit in the draft needing a tight end wand. We'll still have some money left in the kitty, and here are some names out there on the free agency scrap heap. I'll reel some off and tell me if any of these guys you think the team should target. Stephon Diggs, Chidobe Awuzie got released by the Titans, another CB2 type. Amari Cooper, Tevin Jenkins, a left guard. Keenan, Brandon Scherf, a right guard. Calais Campbell, a defensive tackle. Za'Darius Smith or Matthew Judon, an edge. Tyler Lockett, Deontay Johnson, wide receivers. Garrett Bradbury, former first-round pick center for the Vikings, undersized zone scheme center. Any of those names standing out to you or not so much?
I would like to see us go with another interior offensive lineman. Tevin Jenkins stands out. You've got Brandon Scherf sitting there as well.
And I should have mentioned Will Hernandez, who some people like.
And Hernandez as well. Yeah, so I would like us to see another free agent interior offensive line just to shore it up, because I just don't think we have the draft like previous. We just don't have the cattle with the young guys. So yeah, interior offensive line for me. There are some names at wide receiver that sound good, like Stephon Diggs and Amari Cooper. But again, you know, I'm really interested in knowing what the plan is for Ladd. Is he going to be a wide receiver one? I just don't want his development to be hindered by a veteran walking in and perhaps taking away a similar player and perhaps taking away Ladd's targets and snaps. So, yeah, what about you? Is there anything there that you find sort of you might sort of hang a hook out and maybe hope you get a bite?
I think, look, if they signed any of those guards, I would be happy. I reckon that's the best one, because you've still got, I know Scherf is in his mid-30s. Maybe if you could get Jenkins to a similar deal to Becton, where there are some issues with his effort potentially, and you go, okay, you're a second round pick, mate. Here's a 2-year deal with, you know, one of it guaranteed. That's now we're talking business. Now Zion's either a backup guard or he's a center. I reckon that's a pretty savvy way to approach it. Or if it's Will Hernandez. Hey, but look, we've been pretty positive so far. And it's worth mentioning there was a lot of animosity seeing the Chargers sit there and do nothing while big names get signed all over the place. And there have been lots of really good players, Milton Williams, DJ Reed, you know, these kind of guys, Darius Slayton, who signed with other teams. Are you still a little bit critical? You know, Hortiz had $90 million to work with. You saw the problems with Justin Herbert last year. Do you reckon that they weren't aggressive enough and they were too stubborn with the way they've approached things?
I would have liked the one big signing, the one top end. And then arguably you could still almost have what you have now and still have someone at the top end, like a Ryan Kelly or a Will Fries. A Zeitler would have been even good as well. I really think we missed the boat with top end interior talent. When it came down to wide receivers and it came down to sort of some of the other positions, I just looked at some of that money and just went, holy moly, that's a lot. DK Metcalf's contract, would I want that? No. Do I want DK Metcalf? Yes, but not for that money. Like Carlton Davis, you know, at cornerback, $60 million. I don't know. I don't know if we need him. Milton Williams, and this is where Howie Roseman is just...
$26 million a year. He has never played 50% of snaps in a season.
I know. And you just go, this is where Howie Roseman is just, the cash is just rolling in for him in terms of comp picks because he just goes, yeah, take my players. They're successful, but will they be successful at you? You know, hopefully Mekhi Becton is, but none. I think we missed a trick with the interior and getting an absolute gun and possibly having a top three offensive line. Still,
or a corner, Jack. I reckon that DJ Reed contract.
Yeah.
Senior year. I mean, I would have liked like this 1 year deal at corner all the time. I'd love a guy to play corner for 3 years and maybe they'll draft that guy, but I don't think they're going to do it in the first two rounds. If you just wanted to set and forget and go, hey, DJ Reed, you're a starting corner for the next 3 years. Instead of this rotation of has been unsuccessful.
But what was what's DJ Reed's successful scheme look like? Is it a Minter scheme or not?
Yes, I think it's perfect for Minter scheme. He's a zone corner who's undersized and tackles really well. So, but look, clearly they're trusting in Jesse Minter. He showed so much with such little talent that they're saying we don't need to spend money on a $15 million a year corner for you. We're going to give you a $6.5 million corner. He runs a 4.32. He was a second round pick. Do it.
Well, it is very much, and I guess when we talk about the strategy of the draft, when you look at what the Baltimore Ravens do, they're very similar. They just sit there, they sit there, they sit there, they sit there. They sign some guys. Every now and again, they might have a big signing that they do, but it's not every year. It's not particularly often. And they have guys walk. They have guys like Patrick Queen walk, arguably one of the better young linebackers in the competition. They go, yep, that's fine. And comp picks just roll in. Comp picks roll in. They find the guys and then they develop them and they're always up there. That's the pathway to success that I think Hortiz and Harbaugh are not trying to replicate wholly, but when I really sit back and think about it and I actually take my passionate hat off, which I don't do very often, I'm a very passionate man and I love being passionate. I just go, this is what professional organizations do.
Yeah.
They don't pay Will Fries boatloads of money when he's coming off a broken leg. They don't pay Cooper Kupp $45 million when the guy's on the decline. They don't pay Dolman, what does Dolman get? You know, $42 million, $28 million, when he's an average offensive lineman.
Yes, Jack. And building on it beautifully, it's been announced that the Chargers are awarded 3 extra draft picks in this year's draft. That's 3 picks.
Huge.
Based on winning the negotiating and managing things to their advantage last offseason. So the Chargers now will hit this draft with 10 draft picks, 4 in the 6th round. And now if you want to trade for a player in the next few weeks, you can do it because you've got a couple of 6th rounders up your sleeve. Final thing, Jack. The savvy part we should mention is the way they've double dipped at a couple of these positions, I think. Two corners, two defensive tackles, shoring stuff up. Does that mean they don't touch those two spots in the first couple of days of the draft, defensive tackle or corner? Maybe, but it is a smart way to go, hey, one might not work, but we think one of the two will work. Let's do it.
And Taheb Steele and Cam Hart, both players that came in and made an impact, they aren't picked on day one. They aren't being picked on day two. They're being picked on day three. And we know that so far we've seen Hortiz find value with those fourth, fifth, sixth picks. The more of those we have, I think the better off we are.
Getting started.
Well, it seems to me if we were doing a free agency winners and losers, I think the Chargers would be on the winners list. That's just me. Now, anyway, and that's the joy, as you said so beautifully in the opening, Alistair, of doing a podcast a few days after the fact. Let's do this really quickly. Around the horn, free agency winners and losers. This can be anything, anyone. It can be completely left of center. It can be... And we've got to kind of do a couple of home runs for Andy here. He's like, oh, yeah, Will Freeze, winner, got paid. Yeah, cool.
Got him, yes!
Sorry, Andy. I know you might be on the toilet, but I just had to throw that one in there.
Enjoy your vanilla milkshake, mate.
I will start and go with a... I'll go with the winners, and that's and what I've touched on before is NFL average guards and offensive linemen. They got paid a lot of money for really not having the resume to back it up. So enjoy. Hey, I wish them all the best. But yeah, winners are NFL average guards.
And that is why you maybe draft them and don't pay them in free agency when they're costing 20 mil a pop.
Oh yeah.
I want to set up a little bit of a tete-a-tete, me and you, Jack, over the years coming up. My big winner is the Chicago Bears. And this Ben Johnson-led Chicago Bears is very soon going to become my favorite team in the NFC, I think. They're giving Caleb Williams every chance because they have traded for Jonah Jackson and Joe Tooney. They've signed Drew Dorman, and they've taken a couple of defensive players, Grady Jarrett, Deo Odiengbo. My bold prediction... A lot of people out there are saying, hey, if you do the draft over, you'd have to take Jaden Daniels number one, right? If the Bears had their time again. And I think that's fair because the ceiling Jaden Daniels has already showed is so high that if you're just playing the odds, you don't know that Caleb Williams could ever reach that. But he was a more talented and much younger quarterback than Jaden Daniels, who had 5 years at the college level. My bold prediction is... that by the end of this year with Ben Johnson, that conversation is going to come back much closer to the middle. Caleb Williams will have shown enough that people won't be questioning why did the Bears pick him over Jaden Daniels. You could have an opinion either way.
But Alistair, how are good teams built?
Trenches.
Trenches? By signing a lot of free agents and going ham, or by drafting and comp picks?
Drafting and comp picks, but trading, I think, is probably better than free agency for most because as the trading team, usually the cost, the cap, is not so bad and the team that traded them are eating a little bit of it. So I'm in between.
Let me put it to you this way.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams has to be successful this year.
Yeah.
He has to be successful given the amount of capital.
Dunze, DJ Moore, and they've got the 10th. They've got pick 10 overall, and they might take another offensive lineman.
Given the amount of capital that they've spent on making sure Caleb Williams is okay. Sure, fine. How much pressure does that put on Ben Johnson, and how much pressure does that put on Caleb Williams?
It depends. It puts
a hell of a lot of pressure on him, and everyone's going to be saying, hey, mate, you've got the coach, you've got the stuff. If you're not cutting the mustard,
hey, but if they pick Ashton Jeanty at pick 10 overall, maybe that's a way of taking some pressure off him. Anyway,
all I'm saying is that we had the same discussion last year. Oh, he's got Keenan Allen, he's got DJ Moore, he's got Roma Dunze. Look at all these weapons. Good, ba bow. You stink. He doesn't stink actually. He's a good quarterback, but not number one overall. I would have taken. Well, the other, I'll just
maybe Drake May too.
I'll just roll straight into it and just say that the Drake May has got to be a winner, and the Patriots. I mean, they had close to. I think they've spent. I saw something that this, if all the you add all the contracts together, it's like over $300 million. Obviously, there are guarantees and things like that in it, but they have spent a hell of a lot of money, and I think spent it relatively well, which upsets me. Drake May, what he was doing at the end of last year, I thought was exceptional because he had no time to throw whatsoever, and he is more of a pocket passer, gunslinger. He was hitting guys that were windows that were minuscule. So I'm actually a big fan of Drake May, not a fan of the Patriots. But I think, you know, the Patriots have kind of done the moves to be better than where they have been the last couple of years. And they will be a tough team to play on the road.
This is the internal contradictions of Jack Reiford-Reed. A second ago, he says, how do you build
it
a
supports my
team?
Argument, though. That's fine.
How do you build a successful team through the draft of comp picks? The Patriots spent over $200 million on some detritus. And all of a sudden, he's in their winner list. We move on. All right. One of my losers, Jackie boy. This is wish casting. The Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
The Chiefs decide to sign an unknown left tackle, a backup from the 49ers, Jalen Moore. When I haven't heard of it, there's something going on. They decide to give him 2 years, $30 million. They lose Joe Tooney, but tag Trey Smith. And everything this team has tried at offensive tackle, Jack, for about 10 years, including Eric Fisher, hasn't worked. Orlando Brown, Donovan Smith, Juwan Taylor, Kingsley Suamataya, Wanya Morris. These guys are trash. And you've got Kelsey deciding he's going to go around again. You've got Xavier Worthy getting in trouble with the law. You've got Rashee Rice getting in trouble with the law. Is this maybe finally the year, Jack, where it's all too much and we see them take that step back and they no longer win the AFC West crown? I hope so, but so far I've got them as a loser for free agency.
I'm not putting that bad juju out there because you just know when Kelsey is, you know, he's almost had it, but you just know that against the Chargers, they're going to be down by 4 points, the Chiefs, and they've got to move by 80 yards, and then you'll see Kelsey.
It's changing. Christian Fulton and Jerry Tillery, they've signed.
Yeah, I know. Gosh. It's really strange that a lot of our ex-players are going to within our division. It's quite bizarre where not a lot come the other way. It's that internal knowledge that they want to get from Harbaugh. A loser. I just saw this today and I laughed. The Bills, you know, they signed Josh Palmer, but I didn't realize that Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi are both facing six-game PED suspensions. Which makes me think, like, are these guys openly juicing? Like, surely there's got to be some steroid usage in the NFL that they do on the off-season and then come back. I mean, like that's a big 12 games essentially you're losing from two guys you've just re-signed.
What's amazing is Brandon Bean, the GM, came out and said, yeah, look, we knew about one of those was incoming, but we didn't know about the other. And probably if we'd known that about both, we would have gone in a different direction with the signings out for six games. But Josh Allen's filthy rich. I'll move off to a winner. I'm going to say our two hated rivals in the AFC West so far are winners, Jack. The Broncos have signed Evan Engram and Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga. I like all of those moves.
That's good.
The Raiders have, they've started the new regime pretty well. They've got Geno Smith across, who is definitely a top half of the league starter at worst.
At Seattle. Who knows what he is.
Chip Kelly comes back to the NFL to be his offensive coordinator, and they extend Max Crosby. They keep Malcolm Kuntz. They sign a Landon Roberts, a linebacker I liked. They get Raheem Mostert in there as a fast running back. Could be worse. So far I have them as, maybe I'll call them mild winners. It's the only compliment you'll ever hear me give the Broncos or the Raiders. So far they're doing okay, I hate to admit.
Yeah, the Engram signing was a little bit disappointing because arguably we had a very similar offer that the Broncos offered him, and he chose to be Sean Payton's ex. Am I using the terminology correctly?
Joker.
Joker. And I think he's going to be a handful. I always liked him when he played for the Giants. I thought he was, you know, the skill set that he brought, he was that big wide receiver type. Obviously, things didn't work out. Well, he tore his labrum last year playing for the Jags. So, yeah, he's going to be annoying. And I think the way Sean Payton's going to use him is going to be frustrating. So, I'll go with a winner. And I mentioned this before, but, a lot of Philadelphia Eagles fans right now will be saying we're losers. We are losers. We're breaking up the band. We're losing all these guys in free agency. Guys, you just won a Super Bowl. Please be happy. I understand that. But you just have to know that Howie Roseman is sitting there going, I'm God. I am God of the NFL. I am the best GM, and everyone below me is nowhere near me. Because the amount of comp picks, the way that they turn, the way that they draft, they turn and burn, is incredible. And the fact that they picked up DTR to back up Jalen Hurts. One of my favorites playing in Cleveland. I might have some memorabilia of his. So his
rookie cards.
I kind of wanted him to be good. But Howie Roseman, I think, you know, it takes a lot of cojones to let these guys walk who have just helped you win a Super Bowl. But that's what good GMs do, is have the balls to lay it on the line and go off and prosper, my friend. We might see you back here in a couple of years' time.
Did you hear Howie Roseman on the Todd McShay show talking about winning the second Super Bowl?
And I didn't.
He said, you know what? It's kind of like having sex for the first time. The first Super Bowl you win, you're so excited you're having sex. You just don't, you know, you don't really put in there or enjoy it or appreciate it. And then the second time you're like, yeah, I'm really going to soak this in and enjoy every moment. I was like, all right, mate.
Shout out to Howie Roseman's wife then.
In the words of Harbaugh, you got a sex edition. You got a sex edition. Final one for me. I'm going to take a loser. And look, Jack, I'll let you choose, man. Which of these do you want to hear me opine on? The Giants, the Seahawks, the Bengals, or the Texans? They're all losers for me.
Let me go Seattle, because I just want to know what the go is down there.
Yeah. My take on the Seahawks is Mike McDonald already on the hot seat? Because they take a risky move. Look, he brought in his preferred offensive coordinator from college, from Washington, Ryan Grubb, who was with Michael Penix. And after the first year together, he fires his ass. Whatever he decided, we're not running the ball like I want to run the ball as a Baltimore Harbaugh guy. I'm out. They decide to hire Clint Kubiak from the kind of Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, wide zone, we're going to run the ball style of offense. And then they decide to get rid of Geno because they didn't want to give him the money. And they give a 3-year, $100 million deal to Sam Darnold to play in the elements in Seattle. They don't have a dome over there. And they get rid of DK Metcalf, but they bring in Cooper Kupp, whose skill set I think is duplicative of Jackson Smith and Jigba as guys who are really good in the slot. And they release Tyler Lockett. So look, I reckon Mike McDonald's going to build a great defense and they're going to be a very good defense as long as he's the head coach. But as we know from Brandon Staley, once you start firing offensive coordinators, you don't have much time left before the finger points at you, Coach McDonald. And man, Sam Darnold better not turn into a pumpkin or you're in trouble.
Oh, and Sam Darnold doesn't have, I think, one of the better coaches in the NFL at the Vikings, who was my last winner. They've done everything they need to do to sort of improve on last year. The one thing they're banking on, though, is obviously JJ McCarthy being healthy and coming in and playing at a better level than Sam Darnold. So there we go. That's it.
To end this show, Jack, because you've set me up, they're one of my winners too. What do you think about this? There is a rumor percolating that the reason why Aaron Rodgers has not yet chosen between the Steelers and the Giants is because if he can get a one-year deal with Kevin O'Connell at the Vikings, he'd happily take it because, you know, JJ McCarthy's coming back from a knee injury. If you're Kevin O'Connell and you've got a choice of maybe one-year Aaron Rodgers with this team you've built and your prowess as a play caller, or it's year two of our rookie contract, we've got to get JJ McCarthy in there, what would you do? as head
me,
coach.
You know what I'm doing, Alistair. You say what I'm doing.
You're not even returning his calls. You're
absolutely him. Not. Absolutely not. No. 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 No.
You're
no,
going.
No.
Oh, I'm trapped in the subway. I can't get reception in here. I'm in going. The Amazonian rainforest.
I'm looking at the phone call from Belize and going, yeah, that's got to be a prank call. When it's actually Aaron Rodgers.
It's a scam.
It's a scam. That's what it is. It's a phone scam. I can see the allure. It's very Brett Favre-like, and it's just funny how fate falls where, you know, Brett Favre finished his career at the Vikings, didn't he?
He went Packers, Jets, Vikings.
Packers, Jets, Vikings. It's just a bizarre turn of events. And also, don't forget getting Aaron Rodgers, even though JJ McCarthy's put in all this work to then go, hey, mate, we're actually getting a guy. We're going to try and go for it here. And JJ McCarthy goes, oh. I thought I was that guy. So long-term success, short-term gain. I mean, if I was in that position, perhaps as a club, I'd go, yeah, let's try and win a Super Bowl. But the roster's very good.
Fries and Kelly, Jonathan Allen, Javon Hargrave, Justin Jefferson, Hockenson.
Does Justin Jefferson with Aaron Rodgers throwing him the ball, does that sound sexy? Ooh, yes, it does. But is Aaron Rodgers anymore? I don't think that he is. I think his body's a little bit cooked. So. Yep. JJ McCarthy. Right. That's bang on just over an hour, my friend. Thank you so much for today. I really enjoyed it. It was great. It was really good. Loved we had it. Some technical difficulties in the middle there. And your video was a bit choppy and changey for the first half, but we're there. That's okay. Our next episode, folks, we're thinking probably in and around early April where we start to do our draft, whether it's we start defensive or offensive is yet to be seen. But we're sort of going to start pumping out sort of regular content come into April. And I'd really like to probably for us to focus on, to keep on listening, guys, keep engaging with our Twitter. We're rolling on there right now. Alistair, you do awesome work on that. I jump in sporadically. But we'd love to hear from you as much as we can, fans. Comment on our YouTube, comment on the stuff we put out on X. It really means a lot to us. And the more we have, you know, the more fans we get, the more we can interact. And, you know, we'd love to start in 2025, 26, having people on the show. I think that's a really good one for some fan mail and things. So anything from you, Al, before we say goodbye?
Thank you. As I've said, like we haven't had more traction than we have in recent times. So thanks for every like, every subscription. And I hope everyone's feeling a little bit better in the cold light of day. It's the weekend now. Enjoy the rest of your weekend over in the States. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks. This time, I'm going to say the second time, we'll have Andy back and TDU will be a trio once more.
Indeed. All right, Tate, thank you so much. Go Chargers, bolt up and stay safe. Enjoy. Ta-ta.
Thanks.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, 6 and 10, 5, high step, touchdown!